1,100. Israel has triggered a wave of concern after announcing it will open the crucial Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt, but only for Palestinians to exit the coastal strip. Gaza mediators, Egypt and Qatar, as well as six other Muslim-majority countries, have expressed their, quote, deep concern about the plan for a one-way exit for transfer of Gazan residents to Egypt. The statement was issued by Jordan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Turkey and the United Arab Emirates, along with the Gaza mediators. Israel's announcement envisions no return for Gaza residents to their homeland. That has raised fears of permanent displacement of Palestinians, a concept that the hardliner cabinet of the Israeli Premier Netanyahu has been promoting for months. In the West Bank, Palestinians struggle to carry on with their daily life amid violent military raids and widespread settler attacks. In a recent incursion, the regime forces stormed a refugee camp north of Ramallah, leaving two Palestinians injured. Meanwhile, Israeli settlers assaulted Palestinian farmers south of Al-Khalil and prevented them from ploughing their lands. Our correspondent Nika Hamad joined us earlier from Ramallah to bring us up to speed on the latest there.
Speaking of Israeli settlers, unfortunately, they have participated actively in assaulting the Palestinians in the last, at least in the last 12 hours. A violent raid took place into the Christian village of At-Taybe to the east of occupied Ramallah, where many vehicles have been burned down and racist slogans have been written on the church. The Israeli settlers also attacked the Palestinians in the air in the village of Aqraba to the south of occupied Nablus, and also in the village of Turmus Ayya and Abu Falah to the northeast of occupied Ramallah. In addition to that, the area of Masafer Yatta, where the Israeli settlers attacked the families over there, they have been attacking the families over there for more than 2 years, even before the war has started. But these attacks have intensified since the beginning of the genocide, and now on a daily basis and sometimes on an hourly basis, we are talking about almost 50,000 dunams of Palestinian lands that our Israeli settlers are trying to push out those Palestinian Bedouin clusters from the area of Masafer Yatta.
The Hezbollah leader slammed Israel's repeated ceasefire violations, saying that the regime seeks to lay the groundwork for Lebanon's gradual occupation and push to draw greater Israel. The remarks come after the UN Security Council delegation met with Lebanese officials to discuss ceasefire and Israeli aggressions. Mayim Saleh reports.
Despite heightened U.S. and Israeli pressures on Lebanon, Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem says the resistance will not give up its only defensive capability. In a televised speech Friday, he emphasized that Hezbollah has no regard for U.S. and Israeli dictates.
We are cooperating with the government, which has taken the diplomatic route to end the aggression, and we are supporting it in its efforts. The U.S. and Israel have no business in dictating how we manage our internal affairs. Whatever we decide in Lebanon or what we do in Lebanon, whether on the issue of arms or other issues, does not concern them. The only framework which needs to be met in dealing with the Israeli enemy is the ceasefire agreement. We have complied, but Israel has not.
The Hezbollah chief said Israel's aggressions have nothing to do with Hezbollah's weapons. He said the regime seeks to lay the groundwork for the gradual occupation of Lebanon and push for its greater Israel project. Sheikh Qassem warned that if Lebanon concedes, the U.S.-Israeli conditions will not be limited to the issue of arms. Experts believe that while the U.S. and Israel are jointly working on one agenda, they might differ on the means.
One area where they might disagree is in terms of how far to go to eliminate Hezbollah. I think the Israelis would want to do that at all costs. I think for the Americans, at least for some people in the Trump administration, they realize that America has interests in Lebanon. By the way, they're building their biggest embassy in Lebanon. So would all-out chaos serve American interests in the end? If you want to have a big embassy, if you want to be influential in Lebanon, I think you need stability.
The speech coincided with a visit of a delegation of the UN Security Council members who met with Lebanese leaders and stressed the significance of the implementation of UN resolutions. During the meeting, Lebanese President Joseph Aoun urged the Security Council to pressure Israel to respect the ceasefire and withdraw from Lebanon. Experts believe UN resolutions are theoretically a framework for peace, while Israel has implemented none.
Basis for peace are these resolutions. They're supposed to be applied. For example, Resolution 242 calls for the withdrawal of the Israelis from the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights and Jerusalem, whereas the Israelis are expanding their occupation in the Golan Heights. They are occupying parts of South Lebanon. They occupy Gaza. They are trying to also do an ethnic cleansing in the West Bank. They continue to kidnap a large number of Lebanese in violation of the ceasefire agreement, which is part of the Resolution 1701.
When asked about how the UN can enforce an Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon, the Russian ambassador to the UN told Press TV that he hopes diplomatic efforts can bear fruit.
We can do whatever we can in the Council. But the Council doesn't have military means, of course.
During their meetings with Lebanese leaders, the UN delegation voiced support for stability in Lebanon. President Joseph Aoun stressed that Lebanon has always cooperated with the United Nations, but the main obstacle now, he said, was the Israeli occupation and aggression. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
In Yemen's southeast, tensions escalate as UAE-backed separatist forces tighten their grip on key provinces. They have seized strategic crossings and are moving towards vital energy regions. The rapid shifts in control have raised concerns of economic stability, regional security, and the future of any political de-escalation efforts. Abdul Latif al-Bashali reports from Sana'a.
UAE-backed separatist forces from the Southern Transitional Council have dramatically expanded their influence in Yemen's southeast, securing full control of Hadramaut province. This advance comes despite a Saudi-mediated de-escalation agreement that has failed to halt combat operations. The separatists have moved eastward toward Mahra province on the Omani border, culminating in a full takeover.
The Southern Transitional Council is made up of several factions, including Al-Qaeda, Daesh, and unfortunately some thieves and mercenaries from the south, along with foreign elements. They have managed to seize those areas, and this is not merely a rotation of roles between Saudi Arabia and the UAE, but an effort to plunder resources. Hadramaut holds oil and gold wealth, and we should not forget the increasing looting of antiquities in recent months.
Control of Mara carries exceptional weight due to the inclusion of the Shahan land crossing. Shahan is Yemen's only gateway to Oman and a crucial artery for commercial imports such as electronics and vehicles. The crossing is viewed as the country's safest and most stable land route. Its seizure has sparked widespread regional concern given Mara's strategic position and trade networks and its role in maintaining Yemen's fragile economic lifelines.
There is a project led by global arrogant powers, namely the United States and Britain. The project is implemented through their regional tools and aims to reshape Yemen's geography through these developments. We view this as an occupation reality and fully understand that what is happening today is not part of a Saudi-Emirati conflict, but rather a redistribution of zones of influence and control aligned with the Zionist project, especially in this highly sensitive time.
In a parallel escalation, separatist forces have begun extensive military movements toward Shabwa, a province rich in oil and gas fields. The push is seen as a direct attempt to widen control over Yemen's most economically significant areas. Heavy clashes have taken place, leaving large numbers of casualties and signaling a dangerous phase of renewed escalation that could further erode prospects for stability or political compromise.
From Hadramaut to Mahra and now toward Shabwa's energy fields, the accelerating advance of the separatist forces is reshaping Yemen's conflict map. The momentum on the ground signals a critical turning point that could redraw alliances and deepen regional repercussions. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Dublin City Council has been condemned for postponing a decision to rename a public park that honors Israeli war criminals, the Herzog family. Pro-Palestinian activists argue the Herzog family name is incompatible with Ireland's stance on the genocide in Gaza. Jerome Hughes reports from Dublin.
Herzog Park on Orwell Road in Rathgar, Dublin, is named after former Israeli President Chaim Herzog, who was born in Belfast and raised in Dublin before emigrating to Israel. Local pro-Palestinian councillors argue that, given the genocide being carried out in Gaza by the Israeli regime, the park should no longer honour the Herzog family. The renaming effort has been temporarily stalled inside Dublin City Council due to a so-called legal technicality. Activists say that delay is unacceptable.
Isaac Herzog, who's the present president of Israel, he signed an artillery shell to go to Gaza. So this man is actually perpetuating and leading the genocide. And his father also led policies to ethnically cleanse Gaza.
Dublin City Council is now facing national and international pressure to step back from the renaming proposal. Ireland's two governing party leaders have both spoken against altering the park's name. Campaigners say that stance is disgraceful and betrays Ireland's reputation for standing with oppressed people.
If you want to talk about the Herzog family and the person that was named for and talk about Judaism, that's one thing. But the Zionism for which it stands for right now should be renounced, and the renaming is essential.
Current Israeli President Isaac Herzog, son of Chaim Herzog, has condemned any renaming as, quote, shameful and disgraceful. Supporters of the name change counter that the facts are now undeniable.
We were just proud that he was, you know, became famous abroad, but we didn't realise his role in the genocide and in the depopulation of Gaza at that time. So I think there's a different set of facts and there's a different set of information now.
Although a decision to rename this park has been postponed for now, the issue is likely to come back onto the agenda in the future. Some of the new names already being proposed include Palestine Park or Gaza Park. Another suggestion has been to rename it Hind Rajab Park in honour of the Palestinian child brutally murdered by Israeli forces along with thousands of other children during the genocide in Gaza. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
Thousands of people have poured into the streets of various German cities to protest against conscription reforms, accusing the government of preparing for large-scale mobilisation.
Yes, I am here today as a mother, and I am extremely worried about my two sons who will be affected by the new rules. And as a mother, I want to prevent that at all costs. I didn't raise my children to send them off to war afterwards.
Young people are on strike here today because they are not prepared to sacrifice 6 months of their lives to do military service. They say, we need a strong army again because we are threatened by Russia. This statement is not true.
It's a demonstration against conscription and compulsory military service. We don't want conscription. We don't want our sons to have to go to war.
Actually, this conscription must be seen in the context of the preparation for war. With the over 100 billion that have now been made available for this purpose, as a so-called special fund, I am firmly convinced that NATO is actively planning a war against Russia, and I am very afraid of that.
Protests were held in cities such as Berlin, Hamburg, and Munich, where demonstrators holding banners reading No to Compulsory Military Service. Some protesters called for investments in education and social welfare rather than military build-up. If the proposed law is approved, it would require all 18-year-old men to register for possible service with a lottery used if more soldiers are needed. Russia's war in Ukraine and rising defence commitments within NATO have renewed debate about reintroducing conscription in various forms. Pakistan and Afghanistan have once again exchanged deadly fire along their borders following the failed peace talks held earlier this week. Both sides are blaming each other for triggering the latest round of clashes in violation of a fragile ceasefire in place for the past 2 months. Afghan officials say at least 4 civilians were killed during the latest violence. A Taliban spokesman in Kabul claims Pakistani forces launched attacks in Spin Boldak district of Kandahar province. This is while Islamabad accuses Afghan troops of unprovoked firing near Chaman borders. Days earlier, the two countries held talks without any progress in Saudi Arabia. Despite the failure, both neighbours pledged to uphold the fragile ceasefire. The meeting was in the latest in a series of regional efforts to ease tensions following deadly border clashes in October. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has denounced the U.S. military threats against his country as acts of imperialist aggression in violation of international law.
This is nothing less than an illegal act of imperialist aggression, in direct violation of the UN Charter and international law. It is disproportionate, utterly excessive, extravagant, and unnecessary. Venezuela has never been, is not, and will never be a threat to the United States. On the contrary, Venezuela stands as a guarantee of security across the American continent. Venezuela is hope. Venezuela is the hope, the hope. It is hope.
Maduro made the remarks in the inauguration of the headquarters of the Bolivarian National Police Service Academy in Caracas. His remarks came as U.S. President Donald Trump received FIFA's inaugural Peace Prize during the World Cup draw ceremony at Washington's Kennedy Center. Meanwhile, the U.S. military announced it had killed four men in a strike on a vessel in international waters in the eastern Pacific on Thursday. Since September the 2nd, Washington has carried out around 21 such strikes on alleged drug shipments, leaving more than 84 people dead. The operations coincide with the Trump administration's intensified campaign against Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. And that is a wrap for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
She's the love of my life, does everything with a smile. She's my mother, my sweet mother. She can take the pain away with just one look. That's my mother, my sweet mother. You're the picture in the frame with all the colors of the rainbow. I'm far from ashamed to say I love you so. It's late, but I can't sleep tonight. Forgive me if I take my time, but I just have to let you know you're so special. She taught me how to pray. We play games every day with my mother, my sweet mother. Even if I made no sense, listen with patience. That's my mother, my sweet mother. She would sing a sweet song till I shut my eyes and kiss my head and say goodnight. And I feel safe with you by my side. You're there for every step in my life. I'm sorry. You know, you're so precious. If only this was true. I'm in a cold, dark, wet room. I was an orphan, and now I'm 22. I've never known my mom. A picture faded by the sun is all I have. Left alone with nothing more but what I am. It's not enough, cause life is tough when there's no one to call my mother, my sweet mother, my sweet mother.
توكل
comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed. His decree, though...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip, worship as a 24-hour pharmacy. Welcome back, listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how worship is a 24-hour pharmacy. So, of course, our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to the Almighty Allah is something that is really part and parcel of our existence. As the Holy Quran says, that the reason for the creation of human beings and of the jinn is in order for them to worship the Almighty Allah. And so, of course, this means that our essential and our fundamental and our principal purpose and goal in life is this worship and this servitude and this obedience and this ubudiyah to the Almighty Allah. Now, keeping this in mind, we realize that, of course, our worship and our ubudiyah is not really of any benefit to the Almighty Allah. The Almighty Allah, the Exalted, the Glorified, He is in no need of our worship and our ubudiyah. Matter of fact, what's really interesting is that this ubudiyah, this worship, this servitude, and this obedience to the Almighty Allah is actually for our own benefit. We see that there are many psychological benefits, there are many physical benefits, there are many spiritual benefits, of course, when we engage in ubudiyah. And what's really beautiful is that even though the Almighty Allah is not in need of our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah, and even though it is for our own benefit, whether it is psychological or physical or spiritual, still the Almighty Allah in His beneficence, in His magnanimity, in His mercifulness, in His graciousness, He has even put so many rewards when it comes to ubudiyah and to the worship and to the servitude and to the obedience to the Almighty Allah. It really shows you the grace and the love that Allah, the Exalted, the Glorified, has for every single one of us and for human beings and for all of creation. Now, when we're talking about worship and we're talking about ubudiyah, it is like a 24-hour pharmacy. So what we mean is that all of the cures to our ills are available at this pharmacy. But unlike the pharmacy, you know, of the world, which has a certain specific, you know, time that you have to go. It closes at a certain time. It opens at a certain time. This pharmacy, which can and does cure any and all of the ills that an individual might have, it is open 24 hours. And what's interesting, sure, there are some places in the world where even pharmacies are now 24 hours, but those pharmacies will not cure any and all of the ills that we have. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
And now we will listen to Sheikh Zayd As-Salami, who will talk about today's topic.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, my young brothers and sisters. We live in a society that is going really fast. Technology and advancement is going at such a quick pace, we can't even catch up. There are a lot of good things that we are now able to use that we didn't have years ago. The computer, internet, mobile phone. We can learn, we can educate. A lot of positive things we're able to benefit from. But at the same time, there are certain things that we need to be aware of. And these things are not going to help us in our spiritual growth as human beings, in our moral understanding as citizens of a society. And as Muslims, we always know that we have a responsibility and duty, not only towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but towards our own self. We need to keep our hearts as pure as possible. We need to keep our eyes away from the committing of any kind of sin. On the internet, where everyone uses nowadays, there might be some things that out of curiosity you might come across, accidentally you might see, and they are images or clips of naked people. This is called pornography in some times, and you need to be aware and alert on what to do should you come across certain images. How are you going to react? What are you going to do? Are you going to use search engines for good, or are you going to use the internet and browse into other sites for the bad? As a Muslim, you need to be aware of what is good for you and what is bad. And that's why you always need to be cautious. You always need to make sure that you monitor yourself. And when there are signs of warning that you need to be responsible for, then make sure you are aware of what it is that you need to do. Everyone has Wi-Fi and laptops and mobile phones and iPads and all these other things nowadays. And at the same time, you might have a friend that might want to show you something. But you need to know that as a Muslim, you have a responsibility. Don't go into these avenues. So much research has been conducted by many specialists and experts all around the world that say that children as young as 10 are exposed to pornography. And when someone is exposed to these kind of things at a young age, it's never good. You know, as a Muslim, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is watching you when you're in your room by yourself, when nobody is around watching you, your parents aren't there, there's no guardian, there's no parental control or no lock system, but you need to be accountable and responsible yourself. Because when you grow up and when you mature, everything is going to be given to you in its due time. Sexuality is not something that Islam frowns upon, but it's a very, very private area. It's not something that you want to get yourself into if you're a young child, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And even if you were an adult, one of the biggest epidemics that we have in today's society is porn addiction, where one thing leads to another thing, then leads to another. One image leads to another clip, then that leads to something else. And it's a plague. It's going to pollute your heart. It's going to affect your spirits. And it's going to destroy and damage your soul. You're even going to start looking at things in a different way. So please be careful. Speak with your parents about this. Speak with your siblings about this. Educate yourself about the harms and dangers of internet usage. And by doing so, you'll be able to live a good life, a positive life, a spiritual life, all under the shadow of Almighty God, remembering that not only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is watching you, but you always want to make sure that your imams, peace be upon them, in particular your 12th imam, Imam Al-Hujjat ibn Hassan, ajalallahu ta'ala farajuhu sharif, is proud of you and what you do, whether you are in the public or whether you are all by yourself. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Welcome back, dear friends. So we're talking about how worship and ubudiyya and the servitude and the obedience to the Almighty Allah is a 24-hour pharmacy. So any individual, any human being, any person can have communion and communication and establish a connection and a relationship with Allah the Exalted and the Glorified at any time, under any circumstance, and without any prior arrangement or mediation or appointment. And that is so beautiful that we have such, you know, free access to the Almighty Allah, the Exalted, the Creator. And when you look at the unimaginable status of the Almighty God, it really is humbling, and it makes you incredibly happy as well that such a Creator, such a God, such a majestic Allah, the Exalted, the Magnified, the Glorified, has given us the opportunity to be able to connect with Him at any time, under any circumstance. When you look at, you know, the doctors or the psychologists or, you know, anybody in a certain profession, they have very limited, you know, times that they are available. You have to make appointments, then you have to wait, you know, to see an individual who is going to help you. But here, you know, the supreme existence, the existent, the independent existent, the creator of all the worlds, the most powerful, the most knowledgeable, you know, the creator of absolutely everything, is giving us the opportunity to speak with Him, to communicate with Him, to have communion with Him, to establish a relationship with Him at any time and under any circumstance and without any prior arrangement or timing or any kind of a appointment and things like that. You know, we also, though, find that there are special times that we should have this communion with the Almighty Allah. You know, the time of dawn, or the sunset on the day of Friday, after the deliverance of the Friday prayer sermons, when it is raining, the night of power, Laylatul Qadr. All of these are special occasions which the, you know, the spiritual realm and the material realm, I guess, have a stronger connection with one another. And there's a special importance given to these times and these days for supplication and for worship and for ubudiyya. But of course, in general, you know, they are not confined to these things. And worship is really, it is, and ubudiyya in general, it is the medicine for all of our ills, it is the medicine for all of our problems, for our negligence, for our oblivion, for our disobedience, for our depression, for our anxiety, for our stress. And ultimately, it is this 24-hour pharmacy known as ubudiyya, which brings us closer to the Almighty Allah. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight, For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Asma Al-Hatto has not only lost her sister, brother-in-law, and nieces and nephews to the genocide, but she's currently agitated by her fiancé's unlawful detention in the Zionist prisons. With the ceasefire broken by the Zionists as expected, the massacre once again of Gazans continues. Asma implores the world to move beyond posting stories and feeling pity for the Palestinians and instead find ways to end their suffering.
Palestinians know the bitter pangs of deep loss. As a people, they've collectively experienced loss of all varieties, but the scale being experienced is enough to take your breath away. For Palestinians like Asma, the new Nakba has done something particularly diabolical. It's forced the women, the very symbols of Palestinian society, to inhabit roles that were previously unknown to them, especially compared to their earlier circumstances. This genocide has interrupted lives, some temporarily and others, tragically, more permanently. For those impacted, recovery may never come. Asma has lived the Palestinian nightmare, having the man she loved ripped away from her. As with the tens of thousands of other hostages snatched by Israel, his fate remains unknown. The devastation wreaked by this genocide has had a heartbreaking consequence: the number of those left without a mother or a father. This 21st century catastrophe has robbed Palestinians of so much. For a generation that was already used to living under occupation, there is real danger the hope that has been taken might never return. Israel didn't just attempt to take lives with its barbarous actions. It's made a concerted effort to destroy the very essence of Gaza, the homes, the trees, the landmark, the history. Whilst Britain had only just recognized Palestinian statehood, those living in the reality of their hypocrisy understand it's only posturing, nothing real and actionable.
That the United Kingdom formally recognizes the state of Palestine.
There should be a ceasefire happening in Gaza, a quieting of the Israeli bombs, and a chance for Palestinians to take a breath after 2 years of genocide. But we've been here before. Asma knows there will be a psychological reckoning when this period is finally in the rear view for her people. Palestinian survival has rested heavily on the shoulders of its women, especially during this latest, darkest chapter. Palestinians are wary of the so-called support that's been shown. What good is a social media post when people are literally being slaughtered? It's hard to look at a brighter tomorrow when everything you know has been decimated. It's hard to have hope when you're not even sure you'll make it through the next hour. Palestinians need us to do more. Let them see that there is hope, even if it appears far across the horizon.
Joining me today to unpack Asma's story is Dr. Abdullah Humuda, a veteran journalist. Welcome, Dr. Humuda. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Humuda, you know, we just heard Asma's story, and she talks about some of the freedoms that she used to enjoy before. But the reality is she's never been free. I mean, since her birth, she can't have been free, was she?
One of the issues in Palestinian life is that people strive to enjoy life, and they try to enjoy life as much as possible. Children are not aware of that as much as adults, but she spoke when she was young how life it was, and parents try hard not to let children suffer what they are suffering while they are young, until they are adult enough and mature to understand the reality. Especially when it comes to girls and mothers, even if man was the head of the family, a woman, a wife, is the pillar of the family. And a young girl is brought up to be responsible and qualified to be the pillar of the family. And I could see this in Asma, in what she has been doing in the film and what she's aspiring to do when she gets married after the release of her fiancé.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have seen this strength time and again in Palestinian women. But also, you know, there is the reality of what they have now suffered. You know, she talks about how it is affecting their dignity when they have to go and beg for food. Sometimes they have to, you know, mix with men in these very tight, uncomfortable areas. Given the culture, you know, the Arab Islamic culture, how difficult is this for Palestinian women?
It's very difficult, but I'd like to tell you something, that the Palestinians strive against all the odds to exist and live and enjoy life and feel the purpose of the life. From the beginning, the Israelis, the Zionists, are trying hard to deny the Palestinian people their own identity. They don't call them Palestinians. They call them Israeli Arabs. They insist on being Palestinians. They live and struggle with every move and every word to remain the same.
Dr. Humuda, you know, as we speak, there was supposed to have been a ceasefire. It hasn't lasted. The massacres are still, you know, being carried out in Gaza, but also in West Bank. Where do you see this going? What do you think happens now?
Unfortunately, this is going to continue for some time. The Palestinian people have to carry the can and suffer and resist and remain and persevere. The problem is that the balance of power is not at its best for the Arabs in general and the Palestinians in particular. And there is no unity of vision or decision. The problem is that there is no credibility in negotiating or having an agreement with the Israelis or with the Americans, or getting the Americans to recognize that what Israel is doing is indicting itself as a Zionist state trying to establish and remain at the expense of the indigenous Palestinian people. When one sees the march of the Palestinians from South Gaza to North Gaza, that reminds you with the epic films of people going to do something what couldn't be done by the resistance, guns and rockets, has been done by the Palestinian people steps from south to north to go back to their home and find what remains of it and try to create life again, like we saw in the film when Asma tried to look at the clothes lines put to dry and all these things.
So, you know, the issue is, Dr. Humuda, you are Egyptian. You know, you have worked in Egypt. You understand your people and the entire region better than we who are sitting here.
Sure.
Yes, Palestinians have shown this amazing resilience. But where is this resilience in the Arabs, in Egyptians? Why are the ordinary people not rising up, not forcing, you know, aid through the Rafah border? What's wrong with all the Arabs in the region?
The problem is that many Arabs feel their own countries American protectorates, unfortunately. And America has a favorite baby, Israel, which President Nasser described as a territorial aircraft carrier, land-based aircraft carrier, working for the interest of the former imperial powers and the current ones represented by the United States and some Western countries. Since Sadat went into a separate peace, the whole system, Arab system at the time, broke down. And the smaller countries have become much easier to control by the West than larger countries. Egypt is in a very difficult state. And the Israelis wanted to push the Gaza people into the Sinai. And Egypt works very hard to try and keep them there using all means available and possible. Other countries are willing to compromise. I can't understand why the world and Arab countries do not raise the issue that Israel should be held responsible for the rebuilding of Gaza.
Absolutely, Dr. Mudad.
Is the Israelis destroy and the Arabs pay for repairing and rebuilding the destruction of the Israelis? Yeah.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I would have loved to discuss a lot more. But, you know, the reality is the Arab nations really need to wake up, you know, to end this imperialism that is taken over the entire world. Thank you so much, Dr. Homoda, for being with us. And thank you. We play you out with the music of the artist Saif and the sounds of Palestine. Goodbye.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and thank you for staying with us on Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Thank you for joining us. Coming up in this hour, we begin with the spotlight. Right after that, we turn to For Humanity, a reflective program that explores key aspects of human life as addressed in the Holy Quran, from personal development to social relationships and family dynamics. This segment offers a Quranic perspective on how to live with purpose and compassion in both private and communal life. Then stay tuned for Africa Today, where we take a comprehensive look at the political, economic, cultural, and business landscape across the African continent. This program provides a valuable overview of developments shaping Africa's present and future. Up next, Spotlight. Stay with us. There is much to explore.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, this Thursday marks the beginning of the final stage of Sahand 2025, a major counterterrorism drill hosted by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps involving military units from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization states. The IRGC chief commander, Major General Mohammad Pakpour, says that Iran, without limitation, is sharing all the valuable experience that it gained from fighting Takfiri terrorism in the region with SCO members and observer states. General Pakpour also emphasized the extensive and high-profile presence of military and security commanders from SCO partners in this exercise is a strong indication of interaction, synergy, and joint will to counter terrorism and enhance lasting security in the region. The fruits of a growing alliance within the SCO to secure regional peace and beyond is a focus of our Spotlight program. But first, here's a report.
Iran has launched a five-day anti-terrorism military exercise in East Azerbaijan province. Sahand 2025 is conducted within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a collective security mechanism to counter terrorist threats and militant groups. With 10 SCO member states participating, Sahand 2025 aims to safeguard peace, enhance military expertise, share counterterrorism experiences, build common understanding, and strengthen coordination among the member states' operational units. The Commander-in-Chief of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has emphasized the counterterrorism nature of the exercise, saying that the IRGC has gained invaluable experiences thanks to directly engaging with terrorists, which can be shared with SCO member states.
After overcoming the 12-day imposed war, and despite all pressures and threats, Iran has focused, with national resolve and a strategic outlook, on strengthening regional and international cooperation. Iran's adopted an active and responsible position in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in terms of collective security. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has directly fought Takfiri, separatist, and state terrorists that